The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Play Show, yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to what is a quickly approaching Thursday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of the great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and as always, streaming live on YouTube. 888-710-4ISN is the number to jump on in. That's 888-710-4476. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Folks, I'm going to be honest with you. I feel naked right now, and I'm not. I'm wearing shorts, I'm wearing boxers, I'm wearing socks, I'm wearing shoes, and I'm wearing a shirt. So I had to do a lot of promotional reads today before the show. I had to cut a lot of commercials, and we always thank our fine sponsors. And also, I had to do my sports minutes. And I had like 10 to 15 minutes before the start of the show. This article came out from ESPN with Seth Wickersham about this book that he has coming out regarding Caleb Williams. And I walk in to the production studio after I highlight everything and I sit down and I take care of business and do everything. And I thought I had like 20 minutes to start the show. And I'm sitting here bull bleeping with Stu, with Greg Frank, with also Anthony Gallo. And Stu goes to me, "Zach, you ready for the show? You got 10 seconds. And I look up at the clock and I go, "Oh, bleep." So I ran into this studio right here. I don't have my headphones on right now, which actually is a blessing because now I don't have to hear Samter. I don't have to hear Stu if they interrupted me, which would be wonderful. You know, I kind of like this, but I get into the studio and I'm always prepared. And that's the first time that the show really just came up on you. And I was not ready to go at the start of this show. So here's what we got cooking for the next 3 hours. Mike North is going to join us, NFL VP of Broadcast Planning and Scheduling. That will be at 4:20 p.m. Eastern Time, 1:20 p.m. Pacific. He's going to stop by with us, and we will chat about the NFL schedule that was released last night. Alrighty, I'm going to start off with this book that Seth Wickersham has. And in the past, I would be someone that would question Seth Wickersham's work because it had to do with my football team. And I have admitted this to Seth. I've admitted this on the air. I've admitted it off the air. Seth Wickersham ended up being right about almost everything with the Patriots. So when he has something, 9.9 times out of 10, it is accurate. You know, he's kind of like Jay Glazer, where Jay Glazer is one of the creme de la creme NFL insiders, but you don't see the frequency in the reporting of Jay Glazer as you do an Adam Schefter, as you do an Ian Rappaport, a Jordan Schultz, a Tom Pelissero, and so on and so on. But when Wickersham gets something, just like how when Jay Glazer gets something, it's a big news item that is explosive, and it is something that is jaw-dropping. So there was a lot going into last year's draft, not this past one, but the year before that, about how Caleb Williams was trying to avoid the Chicago Bears. So I gather from this article that I'm reading in front of me, and we'll read some excerpts from it. The name of the book that Seth Wickersham has coming out is called American Kings, A Biography of the Quarterback. So in this book, it is revealed that Carl Williams, who is Caleb's father, told Seth Wickersham, "Chicago is the place quarterbacks go to die." Now, let me be clear here before I comment on all this stuff. And I highlighted a few things. There are a lot of things in this article that the way the Williams family says it, I actually agree with. But then there are some things that I don't like. So he is 100% right. I would be a fraud if I got on the air right now and I told you, hey, Carl Williams, you know, him saying Chicago is the place quarterbacks go to die, that's ridiculous. Now, you may not like that the father of the Bears quarterback said this in the pre-draft process before he became the quarterback of the Bears, but that's not a wrong statement. That is something that I have said on this show many times before. If you're a quarterback, you get drafted by the Bears, that's usually where quarterbacks go to die. So Caleb Williams also in this book wondered aloud to confidants through this draft process, do I want to go there? I don't think I could do it with Shane Waldron. Now, Shane Waldron was the former offensive coordinator who ultimately got fired early on, midway through the season, and it was his first year on the job. Now, Shane Waldron, you may recall, was coming over from Seattle, and when he got hired by the Bears, you had Jackson Smith and Jigba doing a radio interview on Radio Row, and he had to ask in the middle of his answer when he was being called into question to comment on this radio show about Shane Waldron. You had Jackson Smith and Jigba say, wait, is this thing live? Are we on the air right now? And they actually were. So I can't say that Caleb Williams ended up being wrong about Shane Waldron. Quite frankly, not only should Shane Waldron never have been hired by the Chicago Bears, Matt Eberflus should have never still have been the Bears coach last year. So as this article goes on, you had the father, Carl Williams, say, I don't want my son playing for the Bears. Williams told several agents in 2024, and he was looking around the league, the father, with the history of the league, and he also met with labor lawyers and agents and even considered whether his son could sign with the United Football League and become an unrestricted NFL free agent in 2025 to be able to pick a team. In addition to the draft process, Carl Williams vented about the rookie wage scale, which could lock his son into the team that drafted him for up to 8 years. He calculated hundreds of million dollars of lost market value income. The rookie cap is just unconstitutional, Carl Williams told Wickersham, later adding that the CBA is the worst piece of bleep I've ever read. It's the worst in sports history. So two things off of that. Number one, if you're trying to orchestrate your way away from the number one overall pick, I know that there's past precedent and there's past circumstances, but I'm talking about in the year of 2024. The idea that the Williams family considered going to the United Football League, playing there for a year, to then become an NFL free agent, that's absurd. Like, there is part of me, either force your way to another NFL team or you suck it up and you play for the Chicago Bears, which is ultimately what happened. Now, in terms of Carl Williams, I can't sit here and have a ridiculous amount of sympathy for when his kid gets drafted and he gets, what, like $25, $30 million, whatever that rookie contract is? But he's not wrong in terms of this rookie cap. Because years ago, like, you would get drafted and you would get a $70, $80 million contract. So yes, even though it's millionaires complaining about how many millions they have, and a lot of us just roll our eyes and a lot of us say, all right, like, come on, you're making enough money as it is. If I saw what the league used to be, it's the rare time, and it's probably the only time, whereas the NFL, which is a cash cow, just keeps on raking in cash. And right, the salary cap just keeps on increasing exponentially. And each and every year, the NFL just goes up in terms of value, billions and billions and billions of dollars. The rookie scale is the one thing where it was better to be a rookie 15, 20 years ago than it is to be a rookie, and not only a rookie, but a top draft pick now. So as this goes on, it gets to the combine in this Wickersham piece and in this Wickersham book where some excerpts were released. At the NFL Combine that year, Williams met with Minnesota. Vikings head coach Kevin O'Connell and the two hit it off. And Caleb Williams began to dream of what it would be like to play for Minnesota. I need to go to the Vikings, he told his father. Let's do it, his father replied. But Caleb and Carl knew that a trade to a divisional rival was extremely unlikely. Bears GM Ryan Poles stood firm, telling Williams, we're drafting you no matter what. Now, here's what I'll say. If Caleb Williams tried to avoid the Bears and he told the Bears, hey, I'm not interested in playing you, you know, playing for you? You're allowed to do that. Quite frankly, do I love it? No. But it's in his right to do that. With that being said, though, it is also in the right of Ryan Poles to tell Caleb Williams, go, you know, pound sand. We're drafting you either way, whether you like it or not, and you'll either play for us or you won't play in the NFL. And that's the proper approach if you are Ryan Poles and the Chicago Bears. Because if you want to look at the NBA and the NFL, and remember when you had a few jackasses that actually thought the NBA was chipping away at the NFL, and you had idiots. Like, seriously, looking back at this, I don't think there could be a colder take in the history of sports than the morons that said, not only is the NBA catching the NFL, they're going to usurp them in short order. Look at the difference from the NBA to the NFL. The NBA genuflex and lets the players run the league. The NFL does not. And even though you may think that's unfair, the NFL just totally runs circles around the NBA. Because there is a lot more structure and a lot more of a hierarchy and a lot more rules that are actually followed in the NFL compared to the NBA. Where the NBA is all about player empowerment. Right? Look at sports right now that are all about player empowerment. You look at college athletics, it's all about the players right now. You look at the NBA, all about the players, and look how much of a mess NIL is, even though I'm pro-NIL. The transfer portal is, how it's the Wild West in college athletics, and it's actually nice that the players are actually starting to finally win in college athletics because they have got abused by the NCAA, such a weak institution and a lame institution for all those years. But with that being said, you look at the success of the NFL. Why does the NFL keep on getting more popular? First off, we're all addicted to it. But secondly, there is a good structure in place where you know where the hierarchy is. And also, the NFL isn't afraid to tell the players no, where the NBA is afraid to tell the players no. And even though players are what make us tune in, even though I watch and I root for teams because of players, and right, you play fantasy and you gamble on players and all that stuff, just because you're a great player doesn't mean the player's a great GM or doesn't mean a player would be a great owner. Like, Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time. He was a horrible owner. You know, I know Tom Brady's a minority owner now of the Vegas Raiders. We'll see what he does. You know, I saw today that Charles Woodson got a small, minuscule percentage of the Cleveland Browns. So you go through it, the NFL has structure. And the NBA, the players just run right through the owners. And I think the structure of the NFL is a lot better. So we continue on with this. That left one option after the Bears GM Ryan Poles stood firm telling Williams, we're drafting you no matter what. And don't get me wrong, if I'm Caleb Williams and you said to me, you could go to the Vikings or the Bears, where would you rather go? At the time, I got O'Connell against Eberflus. Yeah, easily O'Connell. I got Justin Jefferson over DJ Moore, and DJ Moore didn't want me there to begin with because he still wanted Justin Fields. Easily, even if DJ Moore wanted him, I'd rather have Justin Jefferson. So I understand why Caleb Williams want to force his way to the Vikings, but Ryan Poles did the right thing in standing his ground and telling Caleb Williams that no. So that left one option: to publicly attack the Bears in the city of Chicago, hoping that it would make the situation unattainable, similar to what Jack and John Elway had done with the Baltimore Colts in 1983. He's worried about me taking bullets, Carl Williams told Wickersham of his son. I don't care. I just don't disagree. I don't agree with this bleep, you know. I'm more interested in making sure that he could do what he wants to do. But Caleb was concerned that if they did try and the Bears refused to trade him, it would make a tough situation worse. In the end, Caleb Williams told Wickersham, I wasn't ready to nuke the city. After a pre-draft visit to the Bears facility, Williams believed he could be part of the process to turn the franchise around. I could do it for this team, Caleb told his dad. I'm going to the Bears. So that's how Caleb Williams finally said, yes, you're allowed to pick me in the NFL draft and I'll be good with it. So a lot of this comes out and a lot of this was speculated prior to the draft. And I'm not going to sit here and yell about the approach of Caleb Williams and Carr Williams, and some of what they are saying has some validity to it. But with that being said, this puts even more of a target on Caleb Williams' back. Because Caleb Williams was labeled as a generational talent. Caleb Williams won a Heisman Trophy. Caleb Williams is a can't-miss prospect. And let's be real. In his first year, it wasn't as if Caleb Williams was horrible. He didn't suck. He wasn't miserable. But he didn't pop off. He wasn't great. Where you look at the rest of the draft, Jaden Daniels had the greatest rookie season we've ever seen from a quarterback. Drake May had nothing around him, and he was solid. Bo Nix, no one thought he was going to be really any good in the NFL, and he took a team to the playoffs. And yes, we'll see now what J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix Jr. does. But you've had the last two generational prospects in the draft, right, in terms of quarterbacks. Andrew Luck looked like he was well on his way. That's a tongue twister. But injuries ended up derailing his career. Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be all that, and so far, he's been underwhelming as an NFL quarterback. So for Caleb Williams, I think if you're a Bears fan, you may not care about this stuff because you knew probably part of it was true, and you're probably sitting back saying, yeah, we haven't had a quarterback. We've never had a 4,000-yard passing quarterback in the history of the NFL. So I would understand why he was trying to avoid the Bears. Now he's there, though. Now he's yours. And the only time this is going to be brought back up by Bears fans is if Caleb Williams doesn't hold up his end of the bargain. And if Caleb Williams doesn't play well. Because if Caleb Williams doesn't play well, and Bears fans start to look around and say, Drake May's better. Jaden Daniels better. J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix. Like, if you have one guy, right, Daniels right now, and you got others, and Williams never pops off, where there was always a bizarre feel about Williams in the pre-draft process, if I'm just being honest. Like, you knew his talent was great, but there always just seemed like there was something off. And, right, there were questions about his leadership. And you were wondering if that's true or not. But you didn't really hear about any of that this year. There were times he looked dejected on the sidelines, but if I was playing for Matt Eberlus, I would be dejected on the sidelines. So with all that being said, the only time a Bears fan will bring this back up is if Caleb Williams doesn't hold up his end of the bargain, and then Bears fans will say, well, dude, we don't love you. You didn't want to be here as well, and you've gone on to be a bust. And they'll question his commitment level. But I go into this NFL season, and I look at pressure on quarterback-coach duos. I think there is a tremendous, and I mean a tremendous amount of pressure on Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson in year one. Caleb Williams, the quarterback, year one was not great. Caleb Williams in year number one had another rookie quarterback in his own draft class significantly outplay him in Jaden Daniels. Caleb Williams needs to produce on the field this year. And Ben Johnson is Mr. Brainiac. Ben Johnson is the offensive wizard. Ben Johnson, he's cocky. He's arrogant. And you have a team right now in Chicago where you've totally revamped the offensive line. You brought in Tooney. You brought in Jackson. You brought in Dolman. You have Roma Dunze. He's got to get going. You got DJ Moore. You just drafted a tight end. You just drafted a wide receiver with your first two picks. There's no more excuses. You have Ben Johnson. You have the quarterback. And you have the talent. And that duo together, if the Bears with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams don't make the playoffs this year and you're number one, it's a failure of a season. It's a disaster. So let's go around the room here, and I think I'll be able to hear you guys if I mute my microphone. But let's go to Stu first. Who is the quarterback head coach duo in the NFL if I'm giving you Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson that's under a tremendous amount of pressure this year?
So for me, I think it is the Dolphins duo of Tua Tagovailoa and Mike McDaniel. Now, especially McDaniel, I think if they don't make the playoffs, and I don't really expect them to make the playoffs, but if they don't make the playoffs or at least come very, very close.
They're friends.
I mean, he has very well could get fired. And if Tua has another injury-plagued year or not a good year, I know they owe him a lot of money, but this could be the beginning of the end of Tua in Miami as well.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of McDaniel. I have stood by that. I've always said I feel like I am never in on the inside joke, and I do believe that his act is going to, if it hasn't already, it's going to start to wear very thin. All right, let's go to Samter, quarterback. Coach duo going into the season that's under tremendous amount of pressure.
All right, I got a list about 12. No, I'm just joking.
I can't interrupt you today because then I can't hear you. So you could go on and on and on and on and on. This is very dangerous what we're doing until I get my headphones during the break. Just speak. I know now that you're not speaking because my microphone was off. Now speak. You're not a mime. No one can see you.
I was trying to fake it and see what you were going to say. For me, it's the 49ers. Brock Purdy in line for a big contract. So if he gets the contract, there's that kind of pressure. If he doesn't get the contract and he's playing for a new contract, that's a big deal. With all the different differences and losses they had on offense and defense, there's more pressure on Purdy's shoulders. And obviously Shanahan, while there's all this love for him, 6-11 season is pretty rough. Despite the injuries, there were still higher expectations for them. So, well, I don't think he's on the hot seat per se. If they have another really down season and it feels like the window is starting to close in San Fran, then maybe there's something going on there with Shanahan on the warmer seat.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Who is a quarterback coach duo that's under a tremendous amount of pressure for this season? We'll take a break. We'll come on back. We will also chat a little NBA. Can Ant have his moment this year? We'll look at the future of the Warriors and the Timberwolves advancing to the conference finals last night. And should Knicks fans be concerned after losing last night and getting blown out in the second half? This series is now 3-2, still in favor of New York, with game 6 at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, on Friday night.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Last night in the association, they were tied up at halftime. And then in the second half, the Celtics just steamrolled the New York Knicks, especially in that third quarter, outscoring New York 32-17. And the Celtics will send this one back to MSG for tomorrow evening with a Game 6 tilt after the Celtics did defeat the Knicks 127-102. I'll give you a thought on that in just a second. But you look at the Minnesota Timberwolves, what a scene that was last night in Minnesota as they are now going back to the Western Conference Finals, back-to-back season. Last year, right, they were expected to win the Western Conference Finals, and they came up short up against the Dallas Mavericks. And you look at the Timberwolves, they took care of the Warriors 121-110 last night, and Minnesota quickly did dispose of the Golden State Warriors in 5 games, and that was after dropping the first game, where Golden State won, but then you had Steph Curry get hurt. And after Steph Curry got hurt, it was, okay, can you just get one until you get to a game 6 and then see if Steph Curry could even come back and even be effective, but at least give you a chance with the greatest shooter of all time? And obviously the Warriors without Steph Curry look lost, and Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green needed to carry this team, and they failed to do so. So I'll get to the future of the Warriors in just a second, but a true or false here. I'm curious if you guys think this statement is true or false. I'll start with you, Samter. The pressure on the team to win the NBA Finals the most and win the Larry O'Brien Trophy this year is the Oklahoma City Thunder. But out of all the players and all the teams remaining, the individual that has the most pressure on them to win the NBA Finals would be Anthony Edwards. So I think the Thunder as a team have the most pressure, especially with the Pacers already through, the Timberwolves already through, a good chance that the Knicks get through tomorrow night. If they don't, though, and somehow Boston comes back to win this series, it's a Celtics team without Jason Tatum. And you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, it's not a lock that they're going to get past the Denver Nuggets, but I would say it's about 85-90% chance that they're going to do so, up 3-2. And let's be real, Nikola Jokic had a great game the other night, and he got no help from his Nuggets teammates, and the Thunder ended up winning that game coming from behind. So the Thunder had 68 wins, back-to-back seasons where they're the number one overall seed. The Oklahoma City Thunder, to me, they are the team with the most pressure on them to get to the NBA Finals and win it. But the individual player that I think has the most pressure on him to win a championship out of all the teams that still remain would be Anthony Edwards. Do you think that is a true or false statement?
I think that's true.
Stu, do you disagree with that?
I don't. I think it's true as well.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty easy because you look at Anthony Edwards, he is starting to get the crown, or they're starting to take the measurements for him to put that crown on his head and pass the baton as the future face of the league. And you look at a face of the league, not only do you have to have a talent on the court, but you got to be a personality. You got to be a little bit polarizing. I don't think people hate Anthony Edwards, to be clear. Like, you look at LeBron, you either love him or you hate him. I'm not saying that people hate Anthony Edwards, but he's not afraid to throw it back in your face, and he's an enormous personality. Like, Nikola Jokic is the best player in the league. He's a zero as a personality. Giannis Antetokounmpo, second best player in the league, isn't really much as a personality. Like, he is genuine. He is compassionate. He is authentic at podium. But I wouldn't say he's a mega, mega personality. And you look at someone like Anthony Edwards, last year got to the conference finals. And let's be real, since the Timberwolves weren't expected to be there and they got there, even though they blew that moment and that opportunity, we all praise the Minnesota Timberwolves pretty much looking back at their run. This year, though, Minnesota made a big trade. They got Julius Randle. They got Dante DiVincenzo. They said goodbye to Karl Anthony Towns in that trade. And Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves, they weren't bad in the regular season. They were probably underappreciated, especially with how crammed the Western Conference was. They were only a game behind, I think it was the Los Angeles Lakers, right? Yeah, the game behind the Lakers, they ended up quickly taking care of in five games in the NBA playoffs, and no one was talking about them. Really, going into the playoffs, it was like, they haven't been that good this year. It wasn't that they weren't that good. It was just that you expected them to be top three good in terms of seeding, and they weren't that far off from that in their win total. But when they didn't pop off in the regular season, people then thought, they weren't going to take that next step. But how many times have we seen teams in the history of the NBA, especially in the last decade plus, that they know what's expected out of them, they don't take the regular season that seriously, and then come postseason time, they turn up? We've seen the Heat do it. We've seen the Cavs do it. We've seen the Golden State Warriors do it. And you look at the Minnesota Timberwolves, they had to find their way this year with some new pieces, and now they're playing at a very high level. So if we get this collision course of Thunder and Timberwolves, and the Timberwolves are already there, and maybe the Thunder get through tonight, or they send it back to Oklahoma City for a game seven, then it turns into a situation where, let's just say the Thunder get through, you get the best team remaining in the Oklahoma City Thunder, but then you look at Anthony Edwards, he's a dude that could strap up, he's a dude that can find a way to be that great, where he could really have that moment where not only has he been called the face of the league and the future face of the league, but he could really take that crown and give you something tangible and put it on his head, where if he gets to the NBA Finals and he slays the best team remaining in the Oklahoma City Thunder in that process. Now, you still have to then go get four more wins after that, but that would be an enormous moment. And it does feel like, even though the Knicks and the Pacers are expected to still get to the conference finals, like Pacers are already in, I still think the Knicks will find a way to take care of Boston tomorrow night, but whoever wins the West is going to be not only the favorite, but I would imagine the heavy favorite to go win the NBA championship this year. Now, the future of the Warriors, I don't think it's that bright. Like, I don't think the Warriors are going to be a bad team. The Warriors will be flirting just on that play-in line. Maybe they could do a little bit better than the play-in. Steph has suffered a few injuries now as of late. We still know when he's healthy, he's the heartbeat of that team, and he's unbelievable. Draymond, I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze anymore, but the Golden State Warriors clearly do. And yes, you do have Jimmy Butler, but the aura of Jimmy Butler now in his mid-30s isn't what it once was. Now, he's still a very good player, but I don't fear Jimmy Butler anymore. Like, he used to have that mystique to him when he was in Miami. He wasn't on the best teams, and he found a way to will those teams to two NBA Finals appearances. So I think they'll be good. I think they'll be solid. But do I think they're a team that I'm looking at and saying, with the way that they're currently constructed, they'll win a championship again? No, I do not. So that's my thoughts on the future of the Warriors. Now, as I already kind of told you about the Knicks, last night the second half was embarrassing. I think a lot of people underestimated, and not me, because I thought it was going to be a close game last night. I was wrong on that. I thought there was like a 55% chance, just a little bit above a coin flip, that the Knicks could win that game last night. But I do think, even without Jason Tatum, even with the help of the officials, if we're just being honest, because some of those calls were laughable last night. And also being at home in a great environment like Boston, but more importantly, all kidding aside, the heart of a champion, that's what got underestimated. And there's a lot of players on that team that won a championship clearly last year, and you know they're not going to go down without a fight. I will tell you something I don't like with the Knicks, not that you expect them to win every game, but they were up 2-0, and they had a chance to just totally kill the Boston Celtics in Game 3. And they were flat right out of the gate. Then up 3-1 after winning Game 4 with their back up against the walls in Game 4, because it was if they lose, it's 2-2, and then you feel like the series is over. But you go up 3-1. Jason Tatum's now not playing. The Knicks actually were fine early. Like, they didn't play great, and they were still tied at halftime. But in the second half, that was just a terrible effort. And you saw what they did in the first half of Game 3 pop back up in the second half of Game 5. So I'm still going to trust this team in Game 6 because they responded off of getting called out by Jalen Brunson, the lack of urgency, and he did it again last night. So what does it mean at this point? But they responded with the victory in Game 4. I do believe you'll see a Game 4 performance in Game 6 at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. So here's what I think you're going to see. Pacers are already through. I think they'll get the Knicks, and I think you'll see that by tomorrow. And the Thunder are needing to take care of business up against the Nuggets tonight. If they don't, then there's a Game 7. I'm not totally sold on the Thunder doing this tonight. Right now, though, I would lean OKC, but I'm not totally confident in it. And obviously, if the Thunder win tonight, then they will go on and they will play the Minnesota Timberwolves, who secured their ticket to the Western Conference Finals again last night. So the two teams that got to their conference finals last year that are still remaining, the Pacers and the Minnesota Timberwolves, they are already through, and now we're waiting to see if the Thunder and Knicks can join, and I think ultimately those will be the final four teams remaining. All righty, we'll take a break. We'll come on back. The NFL schedule was released yesterday. Mike North, the NFL VP of Broadcast Planning and Scheduling, will join us at 4:20 p.m. Eastern Time, 1:20 p.m. Pacific. When we come on back, though, what is the best traditional NFL rivalry, and what's the best non-traditional NFL rivalry that we currently have going in the National Football League? Update time first. Here's Zach. All righty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We will get to the NFL rivalries coming up in just a second. Best traditional NFL rivalry and best non-traditional NFL rivalry that we currently have going in the league that we love the most. But first, this portion of the show is sponsored by Hyundai. The Hyundai Getaway Sales event is going on now. Get deals so right, it almost feels wrong. But don't wait. Visit your local Hyundai dealer today. So I was going through the entire schedule week by week, and Mike North, who creates the schedule, is going to join us coming up at 4:20 p.m. Eastern, 1:20 p.m. Pacific time, because I got some questions about it. And I felt like Samter, honestly, because I said to Samter, I'm going to give you a list, and there's only going to be 10, and I was going to give you my top 10 games, and then I wrote down 18 games that really just stood out to me. So there's an 18-game regular season. I said, oh, that's a good number. Coming up at 5, I'll give you the 18 games that I like the most for this NFL season. But I was going through a bunch of them, and I was like, oh, you get rivalries here. And some of those rivalries are traditional rivalries, right? Have been rooted in us for years. And then others have become rivalries within the last, like, 5 to 10 years. So it doesn't necessarily have to be on the schedule this year. The traditional rivalries always will, because they're divisional games. But the non-traditional ones may not always be on your schedule. The one that I'm going to pick, it is on the schedule. And it's starting to feel like Brady Manning, if I'm being honest. But I'll get to that in just a bit. Let's do the traditional rivalry first. I think the best traditional rivalry in the NFL, the one that I enjoy the most, is Steelers and Ravens. The two teams just beat the crap out of each other. It's a tremendous year in and year out, great division in the AFC North. I know the Steelers have lost their luster a little bit the last 7 years or so, 8 years or so, because they haven't won a playoff game, but that's still a well-respected organization. You got Mike Tomlin. You always remember, you know, really before Big Ben did retire, right? You had those Big Ben teams with Hines Ward, even at times Jerome Bettis, right? Going back then through the years, Le'Veon Bell, and you had Antonio Brown. And for the Ravens, you would have the defense where it'd be led by Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and Elodie Nada. It was always, and Terrell Suggs. It was always just fun matchups. where you always knew it felt like it was going to be a three-point game, it was going to be tough to score, and they would beat the snot out of one another. So I think the best traditional NFL rivalry to me, the one that is always exciting with teams that usually you have feel like are always in the playoffs, are the Steelers and the Ravens, especially during this Tomlin Harbaugh era, even though, you know, I did mention some players that did predate both those coaches as well, and maybe even go back to the Bill Cowher days, and even, I guess you could say, Brian Billick when he was the head football coach of the Baltimore Ravens. All righty, Samter, what's your best traditional NFL rivalry?
I think you got to go with Eagles Cowboys because it's so high profile and it's been so interesting over the course of decades between the Jimmy Johnson and Andy Reid years to now in the current, just that NFC. And honestly, if you took any of the four NFC East teams and paired them with someone else, there's a rivalry with every one of them. So I had to choose between all. But I think Eagles Cowboys of the NFC East rivalries is probably the best one currently and all time.
Now, I'm not usually a 1-1A guy. This would have been a time I had a 1-1A. The Steelers-Ravens were my one. But the one that you mentioned, no disrespect to the Eagles and Cowboys, a great rivalry. And, right, the fan bases is also what makes it so fun because Philly fans, they hate the Cowboys. Hate them. Like, if you're ever at an Eagles-Giants game, let's say, at Lincoln Financial Field, and if you're a Giants fan, and let's say you're afraid of the Eagles fans, just say Cowboys suck, and you guys will bond. Same things with Commanders fans and Eagles fans. There is a true hatred 365 for the Dallas Cowboys, but Eagles-Cowboys was not my 1A. So I won't give you my 1A away because I want to see if Stu could get it, but Stu, what is the best traditional NFL rivalry? And I think I know, I think you may take mine, but if you don't, then I know what yours is going to be.
So I'm not going with the Raiders one.
Oh, okay, then never mind.
This one has not been the most competitive over the last decade, but Packers-Bears for me, it just feels like that's like football. That's like the definition of football right there when both teams are on. And it's been pretty close overall. Like the Packers have 108, Bears 96, so it's been a really competitive series all time.
For the last 15 years, it has not felt close.
Not felt close, but you know, hopefully the Bears can get back to that point.
Yeah.
And we'll see that, but that just is a fun rivalry to me.
Like, if we're being honest, the trajectory of the Bears right now is in a good spot. Now, it's all based off potential, and potential means you haven't done it yet. And the Green Bay Packers, they made the playoffs again this year, but a year ago, they won a playoff game. This past year, they did not. That was my 1A. I had Packers and Bears. The reason I went with the Steelers and Ravens over Packers and Bears, just it's been so much closer to the Steelers and Ravens the last 10 to 15 years than Packers and Bears have. You didn't have like Big Ben or Ray Lewis ever screaming to the other fan base, I own you, and it could be unquestioned and just accepted like what you had with Aaron Rodgers and Bears fans a few years ago. Best non-traditional NFL rivalry. So, like, for example, even though they were in the same division for a little bit, like, Patriots-Colts wasn't a traditional rivalry, then it really took off when Brady and Manning were there. So, currently, I think the best non-traditional NFL rivalry, I was going to use, right, the Chiefs and the Bengals, and I thought going into last year, that was the closest thing that we had to Brady-Manning in a long time. But after seeing them meet up in the playoffs again and, right, lose again, I'm going to say it's Chiefs-Bills. And it's just the iconic moments that you've had in those games so far where the Bills keep on beating them in the regular season, but then come postseason time, it's not like the Bills don't show up. The Buffalo Bills, right, you had that 13-second game. Then you had Tyler Bass missing a kick. Stephon Diggs dropping that 70-yard pass down the right sideline. It's just wild how these games do end. And this year, once again, they met in the playoffs, and the Chiefs got the better part of the Buffalo Bills once again. So I go best non-traditional NFL rivalry is Chiefs and Bills. Samter?
It's really hard because it feels like all of them involve the Chiefs in some way for the most part, like whether it was the Chiefs-Bengals, Chiefs-Bills. So I'm trying to go away from that. I'm looking at Bills-Ravens are probably like they're the two teams that are battling for second place in the AFC, and they're both those teams with MVP quarterbacks who are trying to get over the Patrick Mahomes hump, right? There's always like one guy in the way. Like Michael Jordan couldn't get past the Pistons, or LeBron couldn't get past the Pistons, I guess, also. And so there was always like a team blocking a star from winning the Super Bowl or a title. And it feels like the Chiefs are blocking both the Bills and the Ravens. So for me, the Bills and Ravens, and plus now you have this Lamar, Josh Allen MVP debate, where they're both trying to, like, you know, who should have won it, who could win it, and they're both
and the Bills
in the
beat
conversation
them twice
every
in the playoffs
year.
Too.
Yeah, so I think, and that's the other part of it, that the Bills beat the Ravens twice, so they're both battling to get to that next step.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, I wouldn't have considered that one, but the way you lay it out, it's tough to disagree with it. Stu, what do you got?
So these two teams only play probably once every 3 or 4 years, unless they play in the Super Bowl, which they did last year and two of the last 3 years, and that's the Chiefs and Eagles. I'm not sure if they hate each other like a traditional rivalry would, but I just think you have the Chiefs, who have been the class of the NFL the past 5 years. The Eagles, you know, their two Super Bowls over the past 5 or 6 years. I think those are the two teams right now that everyone's looking up at. So I think automatically they're kind of just right there, pinned as rivals almost.
You know, it's kind of crazy how 1 year can change everything in terms of answering this question. Because if we did this question last year and you said Eagles, wouldn't we have said Eagles 49ers?
Yeah, I consider that one.
And like, hey, let's be real. We played a part in that with the whole Deebo Samuel interview and all that. But the 49ers now, they're a team that are fascinating to me because it seems like people are out on the Niners. And I'm not saying they're out of sight, out of mind, but when you miss the playoffs, it's like, okay, you kind of lower the expectations for the Niners. But I think the Niners are a playoff team this year. The question is, can they morph back into a Super Bowl contender? I just got a text. It's a long text. It is like a paragraph text. And it starts off, I have a hickey-level hot take / unpopular opinion. And this comes from the guitar player for Avril Lavigne, David Immerman. It's I have about 45 seconds here. You know what? We'll do this. We will tease this because I got to read through this as well. But David Immerman just texted me in the moment saying he has a hickey-level hot take / unpopular opinion. You don't know how happy that makes me, that a rock star, right, listens to our show, has become a friend, and is texting me and also taking a shot at Hickey in the moment, prefacing, you may scream about what I'm about to say, so I'm going to try to calm you down by just saying it's a Hickey-level opinion. We'll evaluate that opinion. We'll do a Super Bowl draft next. Also, Mike North, who makes the schedule, will join us 25 minutes from now. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.